news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Don't look in the basement. The makers of Last House on the Left warn you again. To avoid fainting, keep repeating, it's only a movie. Only a movie. Crossed in a single step. And with this step, you enter the nightmare world of terror.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 173, 1973's Don't Look in the Basement, a.k.a. The Forgotten. I don't know which came first. You don't want to call your movie The Forgotten.
I was going to say, dude, I think you're inviting a little bit of a bad
criticism,
karma on your movie called The Forgotten, because right away you're saying this movie, I think, is sort of forgotten, because you don't hear people talking about this movie much.
No.
With the exception of the title. I mean, somebody might think that, they're renting Don't Answer the Phone.
Which we loved.
Or Don't...
Don't Go in the House, Don't Go in the Woods. Yeah. I've given it my special,
You've coined a certain subgenre for this
admonition movie, telling you something that you should do or not do.
Now, Don't Look in the Basement, there's a wonderful Ramones song. I believe it was off their debut record. Hey, Daddy-O, I don't want to go down to the basement.
And you're wearing a Ramones shirt right now.
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. This shirt I've had for, 20 years.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's sort of had the biscuits. It's holier than a piece of Swiss cheese, but yeah. The Ramones is cool. I mean, they were horror fans, so they wrote a couple songs that reference horror movies. I Don't Want to Go Down to the Basement being one. Chainsaw, which referenced Texas Chainsaw Massacre, although Joey had to rhyme massacre with me, so he pronounced it Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, that's excellent.
Took my baby away from me. Oh, yeah. It's awesome stuff.
Jeez, there's a lot of, between the KKK taking your baby away, there's lots of babies being removed from there.
There's also Pinhead, reference Freaks. The funny thing about the Ramones is that, and talk about things, do's and don'ts. I mean, there were so many things that they didn't want to do in their songs, and there was a lot of things they wanted to do. They didn't want to go down the basement. They didn't want to walk around with you. They didn't want to grow up, although that was a Tom Waits cover.
Yeah, yeah.
But they wanted to sniff some glue. They wanted to have something to do. So you could make two charts: what the Ramones didn't want to do and what they wanted to do.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Now
it's like a Venn diagram.
I
want to
sniff some glue. Anyway, love the Ramones. But we're not talking about the Ramones. Or are we?
We may have to. There's very little
plot. There's very little talk about this movie. So I'd rather talk about Joey, Johnny, Tommy, and Dee Dee, the original lineup of the Ramones. But anyway, we won't be doing that. We're going to talk about Don't Look in the Basement. So What genre would you put this movie into? Forget about the admonition genre, because really, the basement does not
enter into it too much.
There is a basement in this
movie. Yeah,
yeah. It's more, I would say, sort of like a hospital horror movie. And we co-wrote a list, you and I, for Daily Dead, way back when, hospital horrors, and we had a movie on there called Hellhole.
Yes.
Which took place in a...
Sanitarium.
And I'm not going to make a second Metallica reference in 2 weeks
You're
in a
assuming
row.
Our listeners are listening to our podcast in succession.
Whereas last week
Sanitarium,
our reference...
Sanitarium, yeah, leave me be. Yeah, this is the mental health exploitation genre. And I'm not sure if there's really... Is there a word for this? Psycho-exploitation? But yeah, Hellhole had Mary Warnoff in this, and they're doing these weird experiments in this strange facility. So here...
And that sounds good. Psychexploitation. I like that.
Yeah, I like that as well. This is... Okay, how did we come to this movie?
How do we? You. You're the one that recommended we do this.
Yeah,
so.
I was speaking rhetorically there. Yeah, I was sort of sifting through the bowels of, well, speaking of basements, YouTube. And, you know, ordinarily we would buy films or watch them on Netflix and try, you know, make sure we do things above board. But this one, I thought, okay... We had so much fun with Don't Answer the Phone, which is just absolutely hilarious. Just a wild, sleazy, disgusting movie. And I thought, okay, here's another don't do what Johnny won't do, like from The Simpsons. Here's another don't movie, but I had no idea what this was about. All I knew that it was on the infamous Video Nasties list.
Get out of here. This movie is on
this movie, of all things, like, you know, forget the 72 virgins promised you in, like, you know, in Islam when you go to heaven. Our heaven is 72 movies on the Video Nasties list. So we would like to eventually go through all of them. Despite how tame this was, it somehow made it onto that list. And again, that list was very capricious, very arbitrary.
Very arbitrary,
so you
yeah.
saw stuff like Don't Answer the Phone, which was a kind of a gross serial killer killing hookers movie that was really weird and twisted, a guy with daddy issues. This really had very little in the way of violence. But again, it preceded it by a few years as well. So this really got caught up in the tsunami of
hysteria
the surrounding these rulings in the UK. Mm-hmm. So, but again, that piqued my interest, and I thought, okay, this is fun. I like sanitarium movies.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure at this point I've seen every movie on the Video Nasty list. I don't think there's one I haven't. If this was on the Video Nasty list, then this must have been the last one that I had.
Well, you mentioned Anthropophosophos. Oh my God, I can't even say
After Snuffleupagus.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of the more infamous exemplars from that list, and we're going to get around to it.
Well, we sort of did, because at Crap of the Week I talked about Anthropophagus, so yeah. I don't know more there is to say about Anthropophagus, except for the fact that the title is very difficult to pronounce. But that was the incredible Joe D'Amato, the man of 1,000 aliases, R. Steve McKenzie, whatever the hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Who directed this movie? Do we even know?
We don't. Well... I don't know, so I guess we don't know.
Well, IMDb would know, but I'm not gonna care. I'm not gonna bother.
No, I mean, this is not really like it's become a cliche to say it's developed a cult following. It sort of has. It was, as the title would indicate, forgotten upon first release, and it's taken on a kind of a life of its own based on, I guess, the unconventional, mental health practices advocated by the participants and the. Oh, okay. Is this a twist ending? Do we want to spoil it?
Well,
this is something
that it's interesting. Yeah, the ending is twisty.
Okay.
And a little twisty. Shyamalan ding-dong-like.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know why I'm
yeah, well, we can try not to spoil it, but I think that's what's elevated it in people's estimation now from being just another run-of-the-mill horror film from the 70s.
This it's so funny because I make fun of him like Shyamalan. I gotta say, I make fun of him a lot, right? And that's because...
I'm not kidding. I don't ever take umbrage with you for that. Like, I sat through The Village. I don't know how I did.
But that's because his fucking career awful. Was a clear case of diminishing returns. I mean, I love Unbreakable. I think Unbreakable is one of the best superhero movies ever made. Have you seen Unbreakable? And I talked about this last week. I've yet to see Split, but apparently that's a de facto either sequel or prequel to Unbreakable.
Interesting.
But yeah, I mean, he was on a nice little, like a real sort of streak going, and then with The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and I believe his next one that was Signs, which is like the crackers trying to show. And
yeah,
the,
yeah.
But the thing is, I gotta tell you, man, when I saw The Sixth Sense, You've seen it, obviously.
No, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But do you know the twist?
Well, yeah, yeah.
I think at this point we have to spoil a movie that came out in, what, like 1995 or something? Anyway, they're out. No, I think it was more like 99, 2000.
Yeah, probably.
When I saw The Sixth Sense, I actually saw it in the theater, and when that twist was revealed at the end, I was blown away. I did not see it coming. That Bruce Willis, throughout the entire movie, spoiler alert, was a ghost, was dead. I was absolutely floored. I could not believe that I was fooled, and I loved it. And I loved The Sixth Sense. It was masterful. And then I loved Unbreakable, too.
Did you love The Village? Or
No, I hated The Village.
Okay. I've been told I somewhat resemble Joaquin Phoenix, so I was curious. But
You don't have a hair lip.
No, but more him in Walk the Line, but or maybe in the awful... okay, I want to say, is it awful that Roman period
Gladiator?
Piece? Gladiator?
Sort of vexed me, like...
Anyway.
That's a Gladiator reference, but... Do you look like Joaquin Phoenix?
A little bit.
Yeah, I can see
that. Not Joaquin Phoenix now when he's mental with the beard. Well, but back
that was
in the day.
That was a farce, man. That was true.
That was a put-on.
That was Casey Affleck doing performance art.
That was
art
a put-on art. So were we put on by this? Like, did you... Were you moved by the twist in Don't Look in the Basement?
I was mildly surprised, only because I didn't see it coming, but the reality is that it wasn't that original. And I mean, there's been sort of that's, you know, it's sort of like a very cliche twist where somebody's not who you think they are. Speaking of Shyamalan, again, I mean, fuck, in The Visit, he basically pulls the same fucking twist in that movie. So there you go. I mean...
It just reminds me, again, because everything reverts back to The Simpsons, where, you know, Homer gets stamped with, like... Or, I guess the, you know, the healthcare workers in the asylum.
This is the, of course, the famous Michael Jackson episode.
Yes, and there's, like, someone stamped with sane and insane, and it's just like a red stamp, you know, you'd... affixed to a contract or something. It's like, boom, and then insane. There is something to be said about...
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What's the difference between being insane in the membrane versus being
insane
in the brain?
In the brain? Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, there
Cypress
is...
Cypress Hill posed this question,
Well, there's a blood-brain barrier that prevents the uptick of chemicals that are diffused in the body that's not the brain that prevents stuff from getting into the brain. Mm-hmm. So... That's a membrane.
Okay.
And you can be insane in the brain, but not necessarily insane in the membrane.
Ah.
If it crosses the blood-brain barrier, which is a membrane.
But Cypress Hill, we're both insane in the membrane and the brain.
Yeah, I guess you can be both if it traverses that barrier. That's a very good question.
Yeah. More for the F.
I kind of am interested in the psychological horrors and the very real horrors of the psychiatric profession. I'm not going to go all Tom Cruise because I think the profession has lots to commend it, and people have been helped by advances in pharmaceuticals. But I've always been captivated by someone who's just removed from society and stuck and can't escape. In a way, like Session 9, I found very, very captivating. It was filmed in an actual... since demolished mental hospital in Massachusetts.
You cannot say that word anymore, mental hospital.
No, you cannot. No, it's a mental health facility or whatever euphemism, like, you know, George Carlin would have found fault with, because he was always on about euphemisms. But, like, Toronto used to be known for churches back when Ernest Hemingway wrote for the Toronto Star, and sanitariums. That's all that was Toronto was known for in the 1920s. So we have tons of converted buildings that were sanitariums, and there's something about like a decrepit, decaying, run-down structure that is housing someone. It really amplifies their condition, because people, you figure if someone has a mental health condition, they should be treated in a state-of-the-art place. And when you see these Victorian edifices, and these places were mostly built in the 19th century, and they're grim. And they're gross. Mm-hmm. And they have like a bell tower, and you think like, oh my God.
Psychiatry for many years was, it's interesting because, you know, you look back in the history of medicine and you think some of the early medical practices were quite brutal in terms of bloodletting and leeches and what have you.
Exactly.
But psychiatry, I mean, they didn't know shit about the brain, and some of the practices that they would use to quote unquote cure the patients were just completely inhumane, and we're talking about your electroshock therapy, or you know, convulsive therapy, what have you.
And the Ramones wrote a song about electroshock therapy, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they wrote psychotherapy.
Yeah, okay.
There was psychotherapy. There was also, now you put me on the spot. They did write one, yeah.
But in the context of Don't Look in the Basement, one of the patients.
Gimme shock treatment.
Yeah. But shock treatment, electroconvulsive therapy, if I'm not mistaken, still in partial use today. Because it's shown some efficacy in severe cases of epilepsy, if I'm not mistaken. But the one I was thinking of is the one that still sends chills through my spine is...
Lobotomy!
Lobotomy! Yeah, this is all the Ramones here. And in its peak, I think thousands of procedures were performed every year. And the guy who is most responsible for this technique, his name is Dr. Walter Freeman. And this chills me to the bone. He had a recreational vehicle where he drove around and performed lobotomies. And this is, for those who are unaware, I recommend you check out podcasts or even a Wikipedia write-up. You would take like an ice pick and jam it into the prefrontal cortex above the eye. And the horror that the patient must have gone through. I have better than 20/20 vision. I would not even get LASIK surgery because I'm terrified. Anything around the eyes would, like, as a procedure, I would never do LASIK. I'd rather get glasses. But, my God, someone with an ice pick and someone just taking it and going dunk, 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 like they're sculpting, like they're, like a, you know, Michelangelo sculpture. Like, it terrifies me to the bone. Mm. And one of the characters in here was lobotomized.
Was lobotomized, and this would and be
it's just
Sam.
Chilling.
Yeah. Sam, a.k.a. Lenny. Black Lenny,
yeah.
You know, I don't mean Lenny and Carl and the Simpsons, you know.
Yeah. But Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Carl's the black guy, but...
Yeah, and also who bears a kind of a resemblance to O.J. Simpson as well.
I didn't see it, but anyway.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Maybe I need to be lobotomized in order to see that resemblance.
Thanks, I think. Yeah, so we're in a sanitarium, and in the most understaffed mental health facility ever in the history of humanity... Dr. Stevens Sanitarium. It's not implied that it's related to the Dr. Stevens who runs it. Dr. Stevens is a psychiatrist who's got under his care these different people in this hospice. And he's looking after them, and they each come with a series of afflictions and issues. Yeah. I guess we've written them down. The characters.
Well, you got Sarge, who basically, I think he was a member of the armed forces, and now, you know.
This might have been, I think the Korean War. Probably the Korean War in the 50s.
PTSD in the sense that he feels the war has never ended.
He's always looking out the window looking for the enemy, and looking in the forest to see what's, you know.
You've got Harriet, who believes she's a mother, but she has a pretend baby. It's a doll. What else? You got Danny. Red-headed cross
amalgamation of
Richard Simmons and like Horshock from Welcome Back, Carl.
Yeah.
I don't know what his affliction was. He was just annoying.
Yeah, he was just crazy, I guess.
There was one who was like a real horn dog, a female. I can't remember her name.
Yes, that was Nymphomaniac, which is that still a term? I don't know. Like, maybe.
Well, there was never wrote about Nymphomania, but...
I can't see them getting that much action. That would be...
Hey! Come on, man. I model myself after Ramones, and, you know, like, hey.
Allison, and then you have a judge who might have been a former, you know, a former barrister, but he is Judge Cameron, and he's always making these portentous proclamations and decrees that sound like they're derived from probably English common law or something, but it's not necessarily obvious that he was a judge, whereas they do make a direct inference that Sarge was in the army and he lost his platoon. So Cameron might have thought he was a judge.
Dr. Stevens Sanitarium, I mean, he was sort of like on the forefront of modern psychiatric medicine because, I mean, he sort of had a different way of treating these... inmates, or whatever you want to call them. I mean, he
patients?
Did. Because they were patients, exactly, because they were allowed to sort of be in this house, and they had free reign. There were no locks on the doors. They were allowed to do whatever they wanted. And unfortunately, that was to the detriment of Dr. Stevens, because he was doing some sort of weird therapy, which involved, I believe it was chopping wood with the judge. And instead of the wood going into, instead of the axe going into a log, and when it's Dr. Stevens back, so he was done for.
That is sad, because I've just recently heard about The Village, speaking of The Village, a village community-type approach to treating Alzheimer's and
advanced... It always takes a village.
It takes a village to raise, well, a child and an adult who becomes a child, which is dementia. But yeah, this kind of communal living is on the vanguard of dementia treatment. So maybe poor Dr. Stevens was onto something. He gets an axe in the head, and he's done for, you would think.
Head?
Yeah. The neck, anyway.
I haven't seen this movie for about a week and a half.
You'd think, or the viewer thinks, he's pretty much done for. This is a very, as we said, poorly staffed facility. There's basically him and this other doctor, and I'm not sure if this was a reference to the infamous sex researchers, Masters and Johnson. Dr. Geraldine Masters, who is ostensibly overseeing this facility with Dr. Stevens. Dr. Stevens gets killed. Dr. Masters is a
That threw me off when I heard Dr. Masters.
Oh, you're thinking that she has a master's degree and a doctorate as well?
Exactly.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Yeah, the mind is always working. Yeah, and she's sort of a Nurse Ratched type, except not a nurse and a doctor. And she is looking after these patients and tending to their every need, and she hires this replacement, who's this young upstart.
Why do they call them patients? Is it because you have to have a lot of patients when you're not, like, let's say you go to the emergency room, you gotta wait a long time? Is that why they're called patients?
Is this your Seinfeld routine? What's the deal with freeways? You park on a freeway, drive on a parkway. Yeah, that's the bit? Yeah, okay, I don't know. I don't know what the...
Because here in Canada, I mean, over there in the States, hey man, you guys are going through a lot of shit when it comes to your healthcare right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we have our socialized medicine, and I thank the gods for it. But we do have to exercise a lot of patience when we go to the emergency
room. Yeah, we have 6 months wait for a knee surgery. Well, but we have the luxury of being able to go to the States to pay for our own procedures.
And we also have the luxury to go to a doctor when we have a cold and not have to, pay $10,000 on the way out.
Oh, exactly. And if we could combine the two systems, people would live to 130 years old.
I don't want to live to 130.
Really?
No.
What do you want to live to? I'm putting you on the spot.
80's a good run.
You think?
Yeah, 80's fine.
Interesting. Okay, life expectancy for a Canadian male, I happen to know this. So you're good
to
go.
Give me 2 more years after that.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
That's good.
So, okay, but I'm assuming you're in, all your mental faculties are with you.
If only you knew.
Okay. And physically you haven't broken down, you haven't, there's no pain. Both my grandparents lived into their 90s, so maybe you should consider extending it.
I can't afford to live into my 90s.
Fair point. I think that's time to insert a plug. If you guys are interested in horror, please pick up.
If you want me to live into my 90s.
I'll live into my 90s regardless, but Jeff might kick it earlier. Pick up a copy of our esteemed, acclaimed book, as according to Scream Magazine and Rumorg and all these people. Death by Umbrella, the 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons. We don't ask anything of you regarding Patreon or anything to donate. This is a free show. Pick up our book. That would be delightful. So you're going to kick it in your 70s.
I said 80.
Okay, I'm going to have cryogenics. I'm going to have my brain frozen and uploaded to a server. I'm going to live forever. This is a bit of a tangent, to say the least. But anyway, this is unconventional.
You're telling me you're going to outlive me right now?
I think I might.
Okay,
yeah,
well, have fun at my funeral, man. I hope you eulogize me well. I plan to have a New Orleans funeral, but that's another story.
That would be fantastic.
It's going to be the best party that I've ever thrown. Anyway,
we'll see if we can find enough marchers / musicians to accommodate you there. we got this Charlotte Beale, who is she's a nurse, a registered nurse, who comes in to help this pathetic facility staffing levels. She was hired by Stevens. She's unawares regarding the fate met by Dr. Stevens at the hands of Judge Cameron with his axe. She comes in. She's brought up to speed that Dr. Stevens is a little bit,
dead?
Yeah.
A little bit dead.
And so she's the one tasked to be the second in command to Dr. Geraldine Masters.
And Dr. Masters is reticent. He does not want... Well, she perceives to be an intruder to enter the hallowed grounds of this Stevens Sanitarium. But eventually she does go along, and the reason she does is because she doesn't want any sort of... she wants to keep Beale under her auspices because she's afraid that if Beale leaves, doesn't take the job, she'll be sniffing around and people will know things and so on and so forth. And that's the crux of this movie, is that there's
really not much going on.
There's not much going on, but I mean, there's weird things afoot at this sanitarium. There's a few other murders, and there's cover-ups, and there's a twist ending. Mm-hmm. And there you go, man.
And also it should be pointed out that, if I'm not mistaken, Charlotte Beale lives on the premises.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a rooming house, where you have someone looking after the differently abled, actually living on site, which is kind of unique when you compare it to, and we wouldn't, One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest, for obvious reasons. This is a very, very low-budget affair, made for a pittance. Not much happens other than Judge, in quotes, Cameron, skulking about. There, at one point, there's a... telephone repairman, which is just great.
That was awesome.
That was pretty funny, where the guy comes in, and this was...
On his own volition, he wasn't called, because the lines were cut. Masters...
Talk about excellent customer service.
Yeah,
Lyman,
but that's
my God.
Like, Masters didn't want Beale to have any sort of communicate with the outside world, and so she cuts the lines, and then the telephone repairman... I mean, they're proactive.
Yeah, well, good for them.
Dude, like, I mean...
If only your internet provider was
exactly,
so proactive.
Exactly, you know? I mean, God, I get a call. Mr. Kershaw, I hear that your internet is out. Can you come by right now and fix it? No, it's like, I got a problem with my internet, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be there between 3 and 8 p.m. in 2 weeks.
And 8 a.m. or, you know, whatever, you know? Take the day off work fucking Rogers and...
Our local internet service provider, who is not going to be a sponsor of the show, so we're going to name them Roger Cable.
We get no sponsors anyway, man.
This is also true, yeah.
Another reason I'm walking Lift 90. We have no sponsors.
Again, yeah, we're going to have to find some other means of making ends meet here. I hope I'm included in your will, incidentally. That would be fantastic. So you have the interaction.
You will not.
Fair enough. So you have, like, Charlotte... Charlotte, the nurse, and interacting with all these patients, and you have the kindly, helpful Sam, who's the black, sort of childlike patient who has a rubber... does he have a rubber ducky or a sailboat? I can't remember. He has something he plays with in the bath.
Well, he likes soup. I know that.
Okay, well, he's kind of...
Early in the movie, he actually asks Masters, guess how many kinds of soup I've eaten?
Ah.
That's a pretty, you know, that's an interesting one. He's a soup aficionado.
Yeah, I think, I want to say, like, he has, you know, very childlike tendencies. He plays in the bath and stuff. So you have Nurse Beale's interactions with all these characters, and one stuck out in my mind, because I thought this was kind of interesting, is Danny, the aforementioned doppelganger for Horshack and fitness guru himself, Richard Simmons.
Yeah.
Like, he had this giant... afro.
And now, I'm not bitter, but there's a podcast right now that's a downloaded podcast on iTunes called
Richard Simmons, Finding Richard Simmons. Well, if you're a fan of that, check out our site.
Because I don't even think we've ever scraped the top 100 in iTunes along the...
No, we have not, and nor would... Why would anyone be interested in the whereabouts of Richard Simmons, to be honest?
But...
Like, a guy who... We were talking about this in the office... The phenomenon of that guy, his career trajectory is quite befuddling and quite baffling. He's a fitness guru. He's not in good shape.
Exactly.
One of the few about whom one could say that. Like, when we were coming up, Billy Blanks was the guy. Billy Blanks is a Thai bow master. He was on late night TV. Neither of us can sleep. You put on the TV. It's like, this guy does his Thai boxing. And
could you honestly
he's built like a brick shithouse. Fuck, who wouldn't want to look like Billy Blanks?
And who would want to look like Richard Simmons?
Yeah, well, but not even Richard Simmons would want to look like Richard Simmons.
Could you also say that Tony Little was in good shape?
He was on the border. He was in better shape than I was at the time. I think I'm in better shape now. But yeah, he was an aspirational figure. He was at least muscular. Richard Simmons is... Like, he has zero muscle tone, like some sort of 80s, like, you know, like a gangster. But the interaction between Beale and Danny was almost, it was strangely sexual, and it took place in a meadow, and I thought that was very, very weird. Mm. And this is a movie from the 70s, so weirdness obviously abounds. She's very sexy, and talking to him as if he's just, you know, a regular person, not afflicted by mental health issues, and he actually, like, reaches over and gives her, like, a kind of an innocent peck on the cheek. But there was a sexual undercurrent between her and him that was kind of bizarre, and that sort of, I don't want to say elevated this, but it kept me somewhat intrigued. Mm-hmm. In addition, Mrs. Cunningham, who probably was responsible for the film's few scares.
Few scares,
and
indeed,
she is a really quite aged denizen of this sanitarium, this hospice, and she's an 80-year-old with crazy kind of Margaret Atwood, Albert Einstein kind of, you know, gray hair, and she would always appear in different places where
she
you least expected
me,
her.
I wrote down my notes, she was like the crazy Ralph of this movie, in the sense, like, Friday the 13th, he was like, you're all gonna die, you know, don't go to the camp, because, like, he was the one, you know, basically, the harbinger, you know, the doom, the warning, you know, saying to,
the telephone repairman, like, I think she was the one who first met him, if
and
I'm
also
not mistaken.
To
Charlotte Beale, like,
yeah,
to
get
find,
out, get
yeah,
out,
maybe find, like, keep sending your resumes elsewhere and find somewhere better to work.
Yeah, you know, maybe you update that LinkedIn profile or something.
Yeah, exactly. So you got that weirdness with the sexual tension between Danny and Charlotte. You also have this seduction of Allison, the nymphomaniac, very needy, sexual deviant of the group, who I think Judge Cameron tries to... She tries to seduce him, and he will have none of it, because he's a prude. But she's trying to seduce basically every male in the facility. Mm-hmm. And she makes a play for the telecom guy as well. She makes a play for the judge. He won't have anything of it. She's topless in several scenes. She's a nympho. So I guess as the viewer, we're sort of invested in... to varying degrees in these people's afflictions and how they relate to Beale. There's really not much. Oh, regarding Callahan again. Mrs. Callahan, at one point, her tongue is, I guess, removed under cover of darkness. They don't show it. Hey. She's missing her tongue.
See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Somebody did not want her to speak. She was the one that was trying to warn people that something
was
not kosher, was afoot in this sanitarium. So her punitive punishment, the punishment was that her tongue was removed. And that was interesting.
Yeah, it was actually, there's a few like little tiny gems of...
I gotta be honest with you, I wasn't bored. I enjoyed this movie. I mean, last week we talked about Train to Busan.
Bored. We were both bored.
I was bored. This is a movie that was called The Forgotten. Almost literally forgotten. But I was never bored. I dug this movie. The twist didn't blow me to the back of my
living cerebellum, room. Whatever. Yeah.
But it was interesting, and it was a pretty good movie. It's a pretty good movie.
So, okay,
pretty good.
Yeah. So getting back to Seinfeld, what's the deal with, like, axe-murdering psychopaths? Because there's always someone, I think Silent Night, Bloody Night, Silent Night, Bloody Night. There's a whole wealth of movies where someone escapes from an insane asylum and goes crazy with an axe.
Well, the reality is, of course, Jason Voorhees also was, he wielded the axe every now and again. Mm. Maybe it's because we're urban dwellers. I don't know anybody who owns an axe. Do you?
No, which is funny because it's come full circle. Like, I was thinking about a couple of years back when urban dwellers would be wearing lumberjack attire and going, hipsters like plaid.
Like throwing axes.
You read my mind.
Yeah.
I guess people are so divorced from the tactile nature of work, which was used to be, all our names are derived from, not ours, but most names, at least in Anglo-Saxon culture, was derived from what you did as an occupation. Right now, you're divorced from what you do as an occupation, and people are trying to, I guess, recapture, an element of being involved with their work. So, hewing your own wood, or is it felling? Felling a tree, hewing water, I always forget which is which. People in urban cores all over North America, we can't claim to speak for the UK, but any major urban center in North America, whether it's New York, Boston, Seattle, Dallas, Toronto, Vancouver, They have a fight. Today, I saw a guy with an axe-throwing league shirt. And he was wearing it. And it's like, this is the thing to do for both sexes, where you go to a facility and you chuck an axe at a target. Mm. Like, as if you're like William Tell and, like, you know, shooting whatever, a target with a bow and arrow.
Or
like,
Paul Bunyan or something, yeah.
This is weird. Like, this is odd.
I've been invited to many axe-throwing party, and I've
they've RSVP'd. Asked you to join, and you've already always declined?
I've been RSVP'd in the negative many a time, because I really have no interest in hurling axes at targets.
No.
The axe is something I don't think I've ever really, I mean, yeah.
Oh, Silent Night, Deadly Night as well. Well, I mean, Silent Bloody Night, yeah.
They're prevalent in horror movies. They're not prevalent in my life. I've never really touched an axe or wielded an axe or held an axe.
I think I've chopped wood once.
I might have used
chopped axe, wood once.
I might have used axe body spray every now and again, you know, back
and
in the
and
90s.
I was woefully ill-prepared to chop wood with my upper body strength. I always joke with my girlfriend when she's coming home after a late day of work on the train. Gets off at a subway station when she phones me on her way to get to her vehicle on her way home, and we have this running joke. It's like, oh, don't let the axe murderer get to you, you know, when you're at the subway station. And I always think, like, we almost can't help, after watching so many horror films, try and suss out or determine, like, what weapon of choice we would use if we would become killers. And axe is really not very efficacious. Like, it is a terrible weapon. You swing and it's not a fatal blow. It's heavy. You can't run with it. It would not be my weapon of choice as a killer.
What would be your weapon of choice as a killer?
Ooh, that is an interesting question. It would not be a chainsaw. I think it would be a small shiv that's dipped in something poisonous that would cause, like in prison where they, you know, this is kind of a gross discussion, where they would try, like when you want to kill a member of a rival gang, you dip your shiv in excrement, so it causes an internal infection when you shiv somebody.
So you'd be the shit killer.
I'd be the shit shiv killer. Okay. Yeah, because that all you need is a flesh wound, and all you need is a scrape, and then the person, I forget what the word is for, it's not staph infection, it's a blood infection that you get that's very hard to treat, and if it's caught even just a second late, you're done for. So it's not the wound, it's the infection. I can't recall the... All right, what's your weapon of choice?
You know, I've always had a thing for piano wire.
You know? Hey, that's very effective. You sneak up on someone, you garrote them.
Garrote them from behind.
Yeah, that's what it's like. Yeah. Like the Godfather, don't forget the cannoli. Like, all right, I'm going to keep a watch out for you then.
All right. I'm going to keep a watch out for you and your instrument
dipped
ship, man.
Oh, my God. That is kind of gross. You know, delve into some very off-the-beaten-path topic here.
Okay, let's get back to the look in the basement. So,
don't
anyway,
look in the basement, yeah. Well,
don't ask me what I've learned, because I really learned nothing based on this movie. What did you learn?
Well, I mean, again, the aforementioned Dr. Walter Freeman, this terrible procedure called the lobotomy that just, it did help people in some respects, but only those people who were so far gone. I think maybe anything could have helped them, but at its peak, I want to say like 50 to 60,000 of these things were performed. Mm-hmm. Sam, the slow-witted, childlike, I want to say he was a kindly figure who did help Charlotte Beale attempt to make an escape. And I think we're dealing too much with the spoiler territory here. Learned that he was a very kindly gentleman. Pretty terrific character. Yeah, I mean, I think we mostly discussed what we've learned already. Like Mrs. Cunningham telling the phone operator, "You're in grave danger," and, you know, and scolding him and saying, "You've got to get out of here." Not the finest exemplar of psyxploitation around. There's tons of these types of movies. We will probably discuss at one point or another Descent into Madness films, whether it's The Shining or One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest, to pair two Jack Nicholson vehicles together. It's always something I've found fascinating. I've never had any mental health issues, but it's comforting to know that, and we're going to get back to our socialized medicine here in Ontario, there is a mental health number you can call if you're so afflicted by some kind of issue, and it's staffed 24/7 by a nurse who will help you out. So it's a very, very, you know, pressing, difficult problem to deal with, and it's, but I like going toward it and seeing it exploited in a way where this film, in this exploitation genre, I like bringing myself to the edge, even though I've not felt this. I can vicariously feel it through these different people, all of whom, I gotta say, with the exception of the judge, were somewhat sympathetic in their own way. The judge, maybe not as well developed a character. So yeah, we can discuss what we learned here. If you have nothing, we can, you know, segue right into our star rating. But
yeah, solid 3 stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it. It was a fun watch. I mean, yeah, it was a good movie. Characters were interesting. There was a twist ending, which we're not
going to be like too much, and but the fate of Dr. Stevens is also quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And the basement does factor into it, albeit on a very, very tangential and perfunctory manner. Doesn't matter. What are you going to say? Why are you going to, you know, you can't take them to task over what they decide to call this. Mm-hmm. It's still fun. Yeah, the twist is, I think, what made it worthwhile for me. So I'm going to give it 2 3/4, borderline 3-star, fun, quirky 70s movie that has a few surprises.
Yeah. So don't look in the basement, but do check out our website.
www.reallyawfulmovies.com for buy to try weekly genre film reviews of all stripes. And, of course, let us know what your favorite Sykesploitation film is, because again, we talked about Mary Warrenoff in The Excellent. I thought it was hilarious. Hellhole. Just a great movie with these weird, nefarious experiments going on in the sanitarium. Mm-hmm. Send us your favorite, reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. New episodes of our show every Friday for your
fucking
listening.
Friday, man.
Yeah, we're always there for you. We're indefatigable podcast warriors recording for your listening. Hopefully enjoyment every Friday.
Exactly.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.